Translation of purport by Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwaraka, his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. White feathered fans moved in semicircles, and showers of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud was surrounded simultaneously by the sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. Purport. The sun, moon, rainbow, and lightning do not appear in the sky simultaneously. When there is sun, the moonlight becomes insignificant. And if there are clouds and a rainbow, there is no manifestation of lightning. The Lord's bodily hue is just like a new monsoon cloud. He is compared herein to the cloud. The white umbrella over his head is compared to the sun. The movement of the bunch hair fan of flukes is compared to the moon. The showers of flowers are compared to the stars. His yellow garments are compared to the rainbow. So all these activities of the firmament being impossible simultaneous factors cannot be adjusted by comparison. The adjustment is possible only when we think of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. The Lord is all-powerful, and in his presence, everything impossible can be made possible by his inconceivable energy. But the situation created at the time of passing on the roads of Dwaraka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides the description of natural phenomena. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathantam Svitam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vachala Manch Pangam Pangulagam Langavite Grim Yatkripa Tamaham Mandeshi Gurum Dinataranam Nashtapayashu Badrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhakti Navai Bhagavati Naistaki Hare Krishna. So another beautiful poetic verse. The Bhagavatam is full of such wonderful verses. So here, the bodily hue of the Lord is compared to the cloud. So sometimes we hear so many different comparisons in the Bhagavatam. Blue, a freshly formed monsoon cloud, a sapphire just Shama Sundara. So many different descriptions we have of the bodily luster of the Lord. But the truth, however, is that the actual color that the Lord possesses or the Lord displays, we don't really know. Because it doesn't exist in the material world. It's a spiritual color, and this is why we have no experience of it. And therefore, the acharyas make a comparison to something closest in the material world. The comparison of the white umbrella here is the sun. The fans, the two fans moving in semicircles, the comparison is to the moon. And the flowers that have been showered by devotees, by the residents of Dwaraka, they are compared to stars. So you imagine, maybe it's dark. So here is the contradiction. There is a sun, and yet the stars, you can see, the glittering stars. So these are the contradictions which Prabhupada says in the purport. It can only be made possible by the inconceivable energy of the Lord. The stars, I was just thinking, actually, when we think about the stars, the night sky. Could somebody get me some water, please? When we think about the night sky, all of us who live in the cities and towns, we've been sort of deprived of the real beauty of the night sky. I remember the days when I was as a young boy in Uganda. We used to go camping, Boy Scouts. And we used to go to a place far away from the cities. It was like a jungle. And they would camp out there for 3-4 days. And at night, when you see the sky without any influence of any artificial light and everything, it's just something quite beautiful. We can't experience that in the cities nowadays because of so much unnatural light around. So this is the beauty of Lord's unspoiled nature. So this, and then his yellow garments are described as rainbow or lightning. Again, the descriptions, wonderful descriptions we read in the Bhagavatam and other scriptures, how beautifully the garments are described. Lasata pita pate. That's one description I read recently. Kanaka kapisham, yellow garment, brilliant as gold. So there's so many lovely descriptions that the acharyas have given us. So, like I was saying, although there is no direct comparison in the world, Sutta Goswami here has given very poetically a nice and accurate sort of a comparison, as close as possible. So what is interesting, I was thinking, was that whenever you see these comparisons, generally they are compared to nature, and nature in the pure state. So we never hear any comparisons of something in Sastra which is always, it was as tall as a skyscraper or something like that. You know, we don't normally hear comparisons to material things. They're always normally to the nature. And that's why the comparisons, when they're compared to pure nature, that sort of gives us the closest idea of what the writer or the speaker is speaking about, because it is the nature, the beautiful nature is creation of the Lord. And the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam parvartate iti matva bhajante mam. What's the last word? Buddha bhava samanvita. So he says, I am the source of all spiritual material energies. So because the Lord is a source of everything material, so all the beauty of nature in its pure state is the closest we can come to compare the Lord's beauty, the Lord's paraphernalia, Lord's abode, etc., etc. Yet the comparisons, material comparisons, obviously are really inadequate, because when you think about it, the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And as a reflection, it is only reflecting a very, very sort of vague idea of the spiritual world. And this is demonstrated in a passage that I recently read in the Madhurya Kandamani of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. This passage I'll read out is from the eighth shower of nectar. When the devotee has attained the prema stage, and he actually gets the vision of the Lord. So this is what he says. Previously, I compared your dark limbs to the monsoon cloud, to the blue water lily, and to the sapphire. I compared your effulgent face to the moon, and your tender feet to newly sprouted leaves. Now these analogies seem like a pile of burned mustard seeds compared to a golden mountain, or like a chickpea in comparison to a touchstone, or like a jackal in comparison to a lion, or like a mosquito in comparison to Garuda. By my poor intelligence, I have clearly committed offenses to you. So you see here, the devotee is thinking actually to compare all the material things to the Lord is actually an offense. It's like saying that when we compare, if we have, if I say, oh, so-and-so is like so-and-so, and that person is so much higher than the person we compare him to, then it's an insult to that higher person, isn't it? So it's something similar. So I thought that was interesting. And there's a similar verse in the third canto. We're reading the third canto. We just finished reading the third canto in our Bhakti Vaibhav class. So I remember this particular description. And just to compare the two different descriptions here, this is when the four Kumaras, they meet, they see Lord Narayan face to face in Vaikuntha. The sages, again, I'm reading from the purport, from Prabhupada. The sages, headed by Sanaka Rishi, saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who was formerly visible only within their hearts in aesthetic trance. And now, actually, he became visible to their eyes. As he came forward, accompanied by his own associates bearing all paraphernalia, such as the umbrella and the chamara fan, the white bunches of hair moved very gently, like two swans. And due to their favorable breeze, the pearls garlanding the umbrella also moved, like drops of nectar falling from the white moon or ice melting due to a gust of wind. Such beautiful descriptions. So here you can see that the chamaras are compared to two swans. And the umbrella, whereas in this particular verse we're reading, it's compared to the sun, here it's compared to the moon. And the little pearls which hang sort of around the circumference of the umbrella are compared to like dripping nectar or like melting ice. So such wonderful poetry that we have. So reading these kind of verses, when we see beautiful descriptions of the Lord, I often wonder, when will I ever actually get a chance to see the Lord like this? At some time, maybe a million lifetimes later, but when will I get a chance to see the Lord like this? So then again, from the third canto, I thought of this particular verse, which is very beautiful, where Srila Prabhupada is talking about how one can see the Lord. So he says, and this is the third canto, 15th chapter, text 38, and he says, meditators who are very fortunate can see the Vishnu form of the Lord within their hearts by following the yogic process. So the path of yoga, the mystic yoga, the mystic yogics, their aim of all their yogic practice is to ultimately see the Lord within their heart. Prabhupada continues, it is said in the Brahma Samhita that devotees, being elevated in love of God, always see Shyamasundara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in their hearts. So here, of course, Prabhupada is thinking about the verse in Brahma Samhita 5:38, Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram rupam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. That verse says, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyam Sundara, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their hearts of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with a salve of love. So this is how you see the Lord. As a yogi, you can see the Lord within your heart with your eye, the eye of the soul, anointed with a salve of love. But then Prabhupada continues in that purport. But when they mature, the same God is visible before them face to face. For ordinary persons, the Lord is not visible. However, when one can understand the significance of his holy name, and one engages himself in devotional service of the Lord, beginning with the tongue by chanting and tasting prasadam, then gradually the Lord reveals himself. Thus, the devotee constantly sees the Lord within his heart, and in a more mature stage, one can see the Lord directly as we see everything else. So again, in this particular purport, Prabhupada is talking about devotional service, beginning with the tongue, tasting, chanting the names Lord, and Lord's names, and tasting his prasadam. So he's thinking, obviously, of the verse from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1, 2, 3, 4. Atta Shri Krishna Nama Dina Bhavet Grahamya Indriye Sevon Mukhi Jivvadav Swayam Eva Spurat Yata. It says that the Lord's names, forms, paraphernalia, etc., they are all on the transcendental platform, and therefore it is not possible for us to perceive them with our mundane senses. But when our senses are purified by beginning by engaging our senses in the service of the Lord, by beginning with the tongue to chant his name, taste his prasadam, then the Lord becomes, everything becomes very clear, and one can see the Lord as he is. So this is how Prabhupada says we can see the Lord face to face, and the process begins with service. And the significance is that one engages in devotional service, beginning with the tongue, chant his names, the holy name. So for us to get the faith in the holy name and engage in devotional service. So this is the beginning. This is how we would start to begin our journey towards that final place, destination, where we can actually see the Lord face to face. And devotional service, how does devotional service begin? Again, there's a verse from the third, I'm focusing a lot on the third canto because we've recently read it. Beautiful verse in the third canto, which actually describes how devotional service actually begins. And it says, Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti ritkarna rasayana katha yajoshanadashva vapagavartmani shraddharatirbhaktiranukamish yati. So here, in the association of pure devotees, discussions of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation. Thereafter, he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotion service begin. So you see, what we are doing... Sorry. This is the verse 3:25-25. And the translation is, in the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation. And thereafter, he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So now what we are doing, talking about myself, is trying to get this stage. We are not at the stage of devotional service yet. We are just practicing to become a devotee who can actually do devotional service, right? So it starts with association. And all those who are living in the temple here are very, very fortunate because you are all the time associating with devotees. For people like us who are working in the outside world, it's so difficult because we are connecting here like a couple of days of the week, on the weekend perhaps, and the rest of the time we're having to sort of associate with karmi people all over the world. And it's very difficult to keep our focus on Krishna consciousness. So association. And then, not just associating, but hearing the pastimes of the Lord and chanting his glories in association of devotees regularly. It says that is very pleasing to the ear and the heart. Bhavanti hrit karana rasayana katha. So that kind of katha is bhavanti hrit karana rasayana. So very tasteful to the hrit and the karana. Hrit is the heart and karana is here. And then he says, so by cultivating such knowledge, so by a long time doing this, right, then we gradually make advancement on the path of liberation. And thereafter, we are freed. So you see, we're not freed yet. Devotional service actually begins after we are freed. Bhagavad Gita also in 1854 says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na shochati na kaksi sama sarvesu bhuteshu mad bhakti. I always forget the last line. Labhate param. So we only get labhate param only when we are in the Brahma Bhuta stage, right? Brahma Bhuta stage means we are beyond the material world. Mentally, we are beyond the material world. That's Brahma. So that's when devotional service begins. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshma Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur ki jai, Jagat Guru Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So, we have to realize our position, that we have a long way to go and we need to focus our energies to get to the stage where we can utilize the arrangement that Srila Prabhupada has so nicely made for all of us, to come in associate with devotees, to hear and read with them regularly, chant, and gradually that way make progress to the stage where we can actually call ourselves liberated. Nectar of instructions, in the purport of text 8, Srila Prabhupada quotes a beautiful passage where he teaches the stages how to reach perfection. And these are beautiful stages of remembrance, actually. Right? So Prabhupada talks about the first stage for all of us is Shravana Dasha. Shravana Dasha. Shravana means hearing, of course. And Dasha is the opposition. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, the first position for us is Shravana. So basically we have somehow become attracted, or by maybe a friend invited us to a Sangha, like Radhakanta Prabhu did in like 15, 16 years ago to me. And we come and we start to hear. And maybe we even begin to chant at that time. So that's a Shravana Dasha. After a while, that process, you actually mentally accept the process. So in the beginning, you're coming because, you know, most of us are, all of us who are from the Indian background, we have a lot of baggage. We've come from so many different types of religious processes and everything. So we come with all these mixed ideas in our head and we sit there and we think, oh, I was worshipping Shiva, or I was worshipping Durga. How come these people are not talking about Durga and Shiva? They just talk about Krishna all the time, you know, and all that. But then when you begin to actually understand the process and you understand the beauty of the process, Initially, you think that these people are very narrow-minded. They're only talking about Krishna. But when you start to realize that, no, that actually is not narrow-mindedness. That is the strength of the process. You know, we're talking about Krishna because Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And everything else rests upon him. So when you come to that acceptance, that is called a Varana Dasha. So you come to that second stage where you are now accepting it. And now you are more and more interested in reading, chanting, etc., etc. And then by practice of that stage, you would then come to Smaranavastha stage. Smaranavastha stage is now you're remembering the philosophy, you're remembering the Lord, and you're chanting with a lot more feeling. Up to now, you were just practicing. You're chanting because you had to, because somebody said you go to chant 16 rounds, you were chanting them. But now you come to a stage, when you come to Smaranavastha stage, you're actually relishing the chanting. And then Prabhupada gives five stages of this Smaranavastha, right? So initially, when we're chanting and remembering the Lord, it is interrupted, mostly interrupted, actually. You can see most of us, right? We're chanting, and hardly 10% of our mind is on the chanting. The rest of the mind is on what's going on around us. Then after a while, you come to the next stage, which is uninterrupted chanting and remembering. Right? When it says uninterrupted, that means almost there, but not quite there still. You've still got a lot of distractions. Then the third stage of Smaranavastha is uninterrupted and concentrated. This is how Prabhupada describes it. Uninterrupted and concentrated. So here you can see this is the gradual increase of our attention and focus, faith, and belief in what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So by this stage, it's uninterrupted and concentrated. And then the fourth stage, Prabhupada says, then the meditation expands and becomes constant. So whilst in the third stage, perhaps you are very fortunate and we are focusing on our rounds. Up to 16 rounds, we're able to focus actually on every round, every mantra that we chanted on the 16 rounds. That's amazing, right? But then the next stage is that it becomes constant, because in the previous stage, after chanting your rounds, you put your bead bags away and that's it. Involved in other things and mind's gone. But in the constant stage, your meditation is expanded, and whatever you're doing, but at the same time, you are still thinking of Krishna. It's almost like having two brains. You're doing something which you have to do, your day-to-day things, with one side of your brain, and the other side of your brain, you're always thinking about Krishna. That's constant meditation. And then there's even, next stage is even more intense, where the uninterrupted and unceasing faith, the chanting of the name. And that stage, you are 24 hours thinking and chanting. No matter where you are, you're thinking and chanting. And that stage is, Prabhupada calls it, Anusmriti. Anusmriti. And then when Anusmriti is highly developed, come to the stage of Samadhi. Samadhi is very, very elevated stage where nothing else comes through to your mind except Krishna, Krishna Katha, and chanting and remembering him. And that this Samadhi stage, when it's fully developed, it comes to Sampati Dasha, which is the final stage. Sampati Dasha, this is where you actually are in the liberated stage. Sampati Dasha means that you are actually perceiving the Supreme Lord face to face. Not just that, at the Sampati Dasha stage, you recognize your real position in the spiritual world. You know who you are. So your identity is revealed to you, the spiritual identity. So I think it was very beautiful how Prabhupada explained all that. So coming back to this verse, Krishna is entering Dwarka after a very, very long time. And of course, the Dwarka residents have been in separation. In spiritual love, there are two aspects, as we know. Sambhoga and vipralamba. Sambhoga means association when you are together. That's called sambhoga. And then vipralamba is when you're separated from the beloved. And in the vipralamba stage, it is said the vipralamba stage actually condenses, it actually enhances the sweetness of the sambhoga stage. Which all of you, when we away for a long time with the family, then we come back home, it's nice and sweet. So nice to meet your friends and family again. So that sweetness is condensed after vipralamba. So the residents of Dwarka, the queens and the residents, are showering flowers, as we hear in this purport and verse, on Lord Krishna. Those flowers are a medium to express love, affection. So when somebody is ill, when somebody's birthday is there or some anniversary or something, we always give flowers, right? So this is like affection of love. And actually, it's not just the flowers. Flowers don't mean it's the affection, the love behind the flowers. That is the main thing. And you can see these flowers were used even in those times, so it's not a new tradition, giving flowers. So the gopis of Vrindavan, for example, they're considered to be the topmost Vaishnavas. They have the highest love in their hearts for Lord Krishna. And they used to spend their day, most of the day, going around picking flowers and making garlands for the Lord. Right? That was their favorite pastime. It is said that in Kusuma Sarovar, where this is where most of Radha and Krishna's pastimes happen, that Radha used to go around, collect flowers, and make garlands for Lord Krishna. Radharani used to go personally collect the flowers and make garlands for Krishna. So these flowers are very, very important in for expressing our affection for anyone, the Lord or anybody else or devotees. One of Radharani's names actually is Padma Malini, and that means one who makes lotus garlands. So flowers. In Ramalila, again, when Lord Ram and Sita Mata were in Chitrakut, Sita Mata used to go around the nearby forest and groves and pick flowers, make beautiful garlands for Lord Ram. And Lord Ram, when he sees the rishis and munis, the Lord Ram would give them to them, give it a prasadam. So these are all beautiful pastimes that we can connect to this verse. It's coming up to 8:30. What I want to do is I want to finish with another beautiful verse, which is probably one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam. And this verse we learned very, very early on when we used to go to Radhakantha Prabhu's classes. Very early on, we used to recite this verse. And this verse, again, it describes the beauty of the Lord. And this is from Venugit, 10th canto, 21, text 5. Gopis glorifying the song of Krishna's flute. And this one goes, Baraha pidam natavara vapuha karnayo karnikaram bibratvasa kanaka kapisham vaijayan tim chamalam randran veno adarasudaya puranaya gopa vrinde vrindaraniyam swapadaramanam pravishad gita kirti. Beautiful verse. Baraha pidam, with a peacock feather on his head. Natavara. Natta means a dancer. Natavara means the best of dancers, the king of dancers. Natavara. Vapuha. That was his form. Karanayo karnikaram. So around his ear, he's got the blue karnikar flowers. Brihad vasaha. So again, we're talking about his dress. Brihad vasaha. What is he wearing? Kanaka kapisham. So gold, almost gold, yellowish garments. And then what else is he wearing? Vaijantim mala. Vaijantim mala, which means forest, garland made of four forest flowers, five forest flowers. Randrana vero adhara sudaya puranaya. So in his, on his flute, randra means the holes. Vero, of course, flute. What is he doing? Adhara with his lips, sudaya, nectar. He's filling the holes of the flute with his nectar from his lips. Vrindaranyam svapada ramanam. The land of Vrindavan is beautified by his footprints. And this is how he's entering the forest of Vrindavan. Such a beautiful verse. So it's 8:30. I will end there. If anybody has any comments, additions, questions, you're welcome. Thank you so very much.